life better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning, out in the garden, get you ripe when you don't get a hard one. Plant them in the spring, eat them in the summer. All winter without them's a culinary bummer. I forget all about the sweating and digging every time I go out and pick me a big homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, here we are. It's Thursday afternoon, and so we're going to treat ourselves to an In the Garden episode. It's the second episode of the season here. About to join Master Gardener Ed Boyarsky by phone, but first we want to say thank you to the Flower Farm for helping underwrite this program. They are open on a non-contact basis with primroses, ranunculus, hellebores, and other blooming plants that could be placed outside now, along with potting soil, compost, chicken manure for your flower or vegetable beds. And vegetable starts going to be ready when the weather warms up. They're open 10 to 4 every day but Wednesday, 772-3464, and they do deliver. Okay, and let's see here. I do believe we've got Master Gardener Ed Boyarsky on the line. Are you there, Ed?
I'm here, Oren, in a beautiful, sunny spring day, sort of.
Yeah, cold but clear, and, you know, lots of work to do, eh?
There is indeed, and I mentioned we'll talk about some garden cleanup and pruning, but I did start tomatoes, so to go along with the theme song, 2 days ago I planted some. They're not up yet, but a couple more days they should start to peek up out of the soil, and then one more of those sure signs of spring.
Yeah. Ooh, well, what's your setup for starting tomatoes and other plants that you're starting indoors? What does your setup look like?
So I'm still quite old school, slowly being dragged, kicking and screaming into the 21st century. So I am still using fluorescent shop lights, and I've got a bunch of them, and I've got lots of bulbs. I bought them when they were cheap. But I'm also slowly getting a few of the LED bulbs. And we do have enough light with this kind of weather. We could be growing, people could be starting seeds and having them in their south-facing windows. You know, these sunny days, these are working. I mean, we're past 13 and a half hours of day length. I've got my lights set on 14 hours, so they get a good amount of light, and we could push them up even to 16 if need be. So just standard racks. I've got an assortment of home-built wooden racks and nicer wire mesh racks that are, again, they're 4 feet long. They're wide enough I can get with two sets of lights, two shop lights underneath each rack. I can then have four standard 10-20 trays under those. And I've got 10 trays of various stuff, everything from primroses and begonias and basil. Some onions started. The tomatoes are going to go underneath there soon. And then knowing that they're more cool hardy, things like cabbages and broccoli, kale, and that sort of thing could be started. Swiss chard probably too. Mustard greens also, because they're cool tolerant enough. Hopefully the weather will warm up so it isn't freezing to 20 degrees or colder every night. So then they could start going outdoors, at least to start them hardening off in the nicer weather. Get them ready to go into the ground in sheltered, warm locations.
Sounds good. Makes sense. And for people who are maybe getting excited at the thought of such a thing as that, but what if they haven't gone through a process of hardening off? Would you walk me through real quickly, like, what's going to be your step-by-step on hardening off, like, these tomatoes,
so,
for example?
Part of the process is trying to get our indoor plants used to outdoor conditions. And so indoors, it's pretty steady temperatures. You know, in your house, it's probably 65 to 70 degrees or warmer in the sun, on a sunny window, certainly. but there's no wind there. And that's actually something you could provide, gardeners could provide, with just having a fan, like an oscillating fan or something like that, blowing over the plants, and to the point where you can see the plants are moving, and that helps to toughen the stems. Because when they go outside, they're going to be in more intense light with more UV rays, but they're also going to have a breeze more than likely. I mean, some days not, but quite often. So we're trying to toughen them up. We're trying to harden them up. We're slowly, we would take our plants, whether it say that's cabbage plants, in maybe 2 or 3 weeks or so, on a day that's getting up, hopefully at least into the 50s to 60s and outside. And actually a cloudy day is better than a bright sunny day for those first few outings for your tender little plants, because it's a shock to go out into that conditions. Or if it is a sunny day, and which is fine to keep them warm, use some of our lightweight horticultural fabric, commonly called Remay and others, held up on some sticks or props up off the plants, which will somewhat shade the plants, and it will also keep the wind down. I mean, you want to hold this up away so they're not, this lightweight cloth is not brushing back and forth on top of them. That may break off plants.
Yeah.
So, and you're going to do this in small quantities, like the first day, maybe a half hour to an hour, and then you bring them back inside. And then the second day, a couple of them, 2 to maybe 3 hours. And so you do this over the course of up to a week or so, gradually giving them more exposure to the outdoor conditions. And then, and you can kind of see what happens if you bring them inside and they just wilted or, well, broken off, then that means you got to start some more. Or if you miss, or if you forget, heaven forbid, forget to leave them and leave them out there overnight and they get too cold or something like that, then again, you may have to just start some more seeds and, you know, start all over again. Again, that's, you know, if you want to get them started early, that's good. But if something happens for some reason, then we start another batch. And a few weeks later, in the grand scheme of things, isn't going to matter that much, other than maybe the bragging rights about having the first cabbage or the first tomato, whatever.
Right.
Gardeners are kind of a competitive bunch, I have found.
Yeah, nice. Well, thank you. That's a good walkthrough on that process, and good encouragement too, that if you're, you know, embarking on trying that out, kind of adding to your growing season that way, forgive yourself for the occasional slip up, or, you know, the here and there a stem that doesn't quite harden off well enough or whatnot. Just try it again. Keep on going.
Yeah, there's going to be garden tragedies, no matter how whatever happens, and whether it's our lack of care, and sometimes it takes a lot of attention, almost like with children, in their young stages. Eventually, they become teenagers, and at least they're pretty tough, mostly. But then also when you're hardening these off, you also want to make sure you're not putting them out there where the slugs can get to them, or sometimes even small birds, well, up to including crows and ravens, might be quite interested in some of this new stuff which has appeared in their neighborhood, that you want to check it out. Certainly I've had them pecking holes in plastic and in this horticultural fabric. They're thinking, oh, there must be something good underneath here. We should check it out.
That's true. Yeah, that's
so
true.
You got to be vigilant.
Yes, indeed. Well, those are great tips. Yeah, there's a lot to think about on that, the whole process, but it's good to get the gears turning that way and to give it a try. And it does feel good that we're finally have days that are long enough that we can make use of our southern windows if we don't have a space, for example, or the current equipment to, you know, raise and lower lights over seeds and stuff like that. But Yeah,
I mean, you talk about raising and lower lights. I do it just the opposite. I raise and lower the seed trays.
Mm.
So I scraps of 2x4s and 4x4s left over from the garage and shop and wherever. So the lights stay fixed up at the top, even though you may well have, and I have, I mean, they come with chains that you could adjust up and down. But if you've got multiple crops, say in that one rack of four trays with different chunks of, or numbers of 2x4s, you can have, one's going to be up high, close, they all need to be close to the lights, but as the individual plants grow, then you have to drop the trays down lower. So you want those plants to be within 2 to 4 inches, the tops of them, of the lights, unless there's other directions. With LED lights tend to be a bit brighter, you can space them out a little more. And there's still other different kinds of lights, some of the high-intensity sodium or others, you know, that are really, well, face burners, whether some folks are growing multiple crops underneath them. Some of those have to be spaced out farther, and you just have to know what that is. And you can, part of that is even watching the plant reaction. If they're too close to the lights, then particularly the ends of fluorescent lights at least can be kind of hot. You want to be careful they don't get touched, the leaves don't touch those, and you get brown off the leaves.
Right.
Well, the plants kind of tell you what they need. If they're too far away from the light, they'll reach and grow taller and get spindly and then fall over because they don't have enough light. And again, that a little bit of a fan will help to toughen up the stems.
Good points. And I like that idea of using blocks underneath the trays so that if you have different seeds that are growing at different rates, you can still keep them close. You know, if this side of the plants under the light are growing twice as fast, you'll want to be lowering them down at a different rate than the others.
Right. The other thing, too, is, you know, as I understand, at least with LED lights, they're fairly even, even amounts of light from end to end and in the middle. Fluorescent lights are definitely more intense in the center, and that drop, the light intensity drops off to the outer ends. So it's worth rotating from the middle to the outside and back and forth. You know, every few days. So again, we're trying to give these plants fairly even light. Same thing goes for those plants. If they're in a window, they're going to lean toward the light, and you're going to want to rotate them 180 degrees. You know, maybe it might be every day or every other day. And that rotation, and then, of course, they grow the other direction. Again, that helps, to some extent, toughen up the stems.
Right. Those are great tips. Gosh, good stuff. Well, okay, so this time of year, then, there's still lots of prep work going on in the greenhouse, right? Is that your day-to-day life right now?
Oh, yes, definitely. And I just, in the back of my truck, as we speak, I have the plastic, which is going to form the second layer on my greenhouse, and hopefully it'll get up this weekend and get it inflated. So, in the meanwhile, I am building boxes inside the greenhouse to where the tomatoes and peppers and, well, not peppers, probably cucumbers and pole beans and other stuff will be growing a little later. And trying to get everything cleaned out. I've got fabric. I've got the black woven fabric on the ground. I've been sweeping and cleaning it out. Of course, with the new cover on it, it was open to the air for months of the winter, which is fine. That may be good in the long run. But then outdoors, you know, getting the greenhouse cleaned out now before plants go in it is really important. You know, getting the dirty stuff, if there's any dead vegetation there, get that out, clean up pots, get rid of if there's any moss growing on the soil. You know, you might scrape that top layer off and replace that and mix in some compost in the soil into your boxes or tubs, whatever you're growing in is good. And then outdoors, it's really pruning season for a lot of stuff, for our fruits and berries to be raspberries. If you didn't clean out, cut down the old stems that bore fruit last year, now's the time to do that. Set up your new ropes, twine, wires, vine supports, whatever that happens to be. For them, you know, and some people I know top their raspberries at a certain, like maybe at 6 feet high. So you can clip those off and, like I said, get them all nicely supported. So hopefully we get a good heavy crop and they don't fall down, flop down to the ground where the slugs and the birds will eat them.
Aha, uh-huh. Yes, totally. So that is a really good reminder that if you got a good haul of raspberries last year, you're wanting to go in and prune out the stems and branches there that bore fruit last year, right?
Exactly. And so that's easy to tell which is which. Usually the new stems, the ones that came up last year that will give us fruit this year, are starting, the buds are starting to grow. I mean, they're starting to get some green tips on those. And they're just pretty much a straight stem with just side buds. Where the branches that the stems that gave us fruit last year will have side branches, so they're easy to tell apart, and you can look at them if you want. You can even scrape the bark down at the, near the base, but the old ones from last year will be brown and dead, and the new ones that grew last year for this year's crop will be green, so you can tell apart. And then also prune out the little short ones. So if most of your plants are big and tall, 4 to 6 feet tall, but you've got these little spindly stuff that's only a foot or 2 feet tall, those are worth clipping out of the patch so that the energy goes into those big, strong plants, which can more readily support a fruit load. Your other alternative is you can certainly cut or dig out some of those small ones and use that to expand your patch if need be, or share with a friend.
Wow, okay. That's a really interesting point then, that the whole patch is sharing nutrients underground, right? Like the roots are the whole patch's roots, basically?
Well, almost. It, you know, if you planted, new plants, say 2 years ago, then last year you should have gotten a medium crop, and this year, each year the plants get larger, and an individual plant will put out multiple stems from its system.
Gotcha.
And some of them, some spread faster than others. So, I mean, raspberries normally spread underground, and then they start to pop up out, you know, 6 inches or a foot from the mother plant, and sometimes farther than that. You know, they aren't quite as fast spreading as salmonberries, which can put on 2 to 3 feet underground every year. But still, they can, and that's where, too, this is a great time of year. You're doing your cleanup work, rake out any old leaves that are in there, and throw down, it's nice if you have some cardboard and wood chips to throw down in the paths, which will maintain your paths so you can still get into your patch, that they don't get completely grown over, and that you need to take a machete into them in late summer when you're trying to pick fruit.
Good point. Yeah. What good is a total impenetrable thicket of berries full of goodness on the inside? You want to, nice. Maintain a path.
Yeah, and that the other thing that helps is the air circulation ventilation. So the better the air circulation is in there, when, you know, knowing we're going to get rain when the berries are trying to ripen, that if we can keep them so they dry out more quickly, then they're less likely to rot. I mean, I've gone to, for the past two seasons, the past two summer seasons, I've got an old Costco shelter frame that gets just the top cover on it about a week before the berries are ready to start ripening, say mid-July or whatever that is in your neighborhood, and get that up to keep the rain off those berries and off the plants, which will keep the mold and mildew down, and you get more equal berries.
Right. Nice. Makes sense.
You know, depending on how much snow you got down there, and if folks have that kind of shelters, some of them are, if they aren't tended enough, they become a casualty. And sometimes when I'm driving around and I see one of those casualties, I'll go up to somebody and knock on their door and say, hey, you want your remains of that shelter hauled away? And then some parts are not reusable, but many parts will be. So I've got spare parts to repair my own, which may have not gotten tended to enough at times. So I've got lots of extra pieces for those shelters.
Nice. It's a win-win. Yeah, okay. So we're pruning berry patches, this time of year, you know, this is a perfect time for doing that. But also, like, fruit trees and things like that, right? Where, while sure. before blossoms and all that?
Yes, we might stay with berries for just a little bit longer, things like currants and gooseberries.
Yes, yes.
Those two, you know, those are more of a big clump, as opposed to, you know, we can plant the raspberries in a row, or blackberries or other berries. But with currants and gooseberries, our bushes, usually multi to many stems, depending on how old they are. And each year, or every couple of years, I mean, each stem will continue to bear fruit once it starts. But if you get so many stems in there, then again, that's a problem for the air circulation. And then the berries tend to get smaller also. So it's worth looking this time of year particularly, because you can see the form and the size, and it's easier to tell if there's deadwood in there, get that out of there first. Old dead stems. And then look at the biggest, oldest ones, and take some of those out also. That might have been what you first planted 5 or 10 years ago that have grown. And each year you get new shoots coming up there. Again, pretty obvious. They're pretty much straight stems. They may be taller, where those older ones tend to kind of spread out more to the side. And again, take out some of those oldest ones, and again, that's going to stimulate new growth, which will have better and bigger fruit on them to a certain extent.
Ah, okay. So in these currant and gooseberry bushes, the older stems, though they look kind of strong and hardy and whatnot, are actually bearing smaller fruit?
Yes, and you can see the difference. You know, even the bark on those stems looks a different color. It tends to be darker to, you know, to gray to almost black in the older, those older stems. So again, if there's, say you see that there's 8 or 10 of these big old stems in there, plus many new shoots, you don't necessarily need to take all of those old ones out all in one year, but just take out 4 or 5. And then the next year do the same thing, and you end up gradually renewing your bush. Your root system's still growing. Hopefully you're throwing some seaweed and some compost around the base of them. That's worthwhile too. And or, you know, if you do that and then throw some mulch around that, again, you'll try to keep the weeds down underneath them too. And again, that all helps in the air circulation and less disease problems and that sort of thing. And again, if you can block off using some cardboard underneath, you may, may reduce some of the incidence of the imported currant worm, which comes up out of their pupas in late May or so, and usually right underneath the bushes where they lived and ate the leaves up last year.
Right.
So you can hopefully slow down that process a little bit.
Is there any other good advice for fighting off that particular pest, or is it just kind of...
Clean up is the best thing, and even now, you know, going in there and raking out any old leaves in there, and we've got some of the small birds that are migrating through. You know, those little birds are down there scratching around the base of the plants, too, and looking for pupa cases and worms and other stuff. So, again, that makes it a little easier for them to do that.
Oh, nice, nice.
Clean up, truly is cleanup primarily, and if you see eventually later on, we'll keep watching for them, you know, usually then using a soap spray or something like that on the insects. But this time of year, it's all about cleanup work in the garden.
Totally. That's so good to just reiterate for gardeners out there, and this is, you know, maybe there are folks who are spending more time at home, maybe they're working from home, and they need to get up and stretch, and they look out at the bush and they see some cleanup that can be done. Go do some stretching out in the garden.
I think that people's gardens ought to be, you know, everybody's garden with this kind of forced free time ought to have weed-free gardens this summer. They should be their best gardens ever, right?
I think so. Sounds right to me.
Well, we'll see how that looks in June and July and August after a few more of these. But then, yeah, like you mentioned, there's trees. And whether it be apple trees, cherries, plum trees, or other fruiting trees, again, great time of year to be able to look at the structure of the tree, maybe there was some heavy snow that might have broken some branches down. That's possible. So we want to trim off, cut clean any breaks that were out there. Any deadwood, again, deadwood doesn't help the tree in any way. So remove the deadwood. Cut it back to where there's new healthy growth. And then you start looking at, are there lots of the suckering growth, those thick sprouts, where maybe you cut a big branch off last spring. And because that energy has to go somewhere from the roots, then that pushed out three or four or five new shoots off the end of that branch, that cut branch end. So that's where you would want to thin and maybe shorten some of those shoots, suckers, so they can produce fruit. So there's a little less competition, but also by shortening them, and some of those lower buds will then break out, and hopefully a few of them at least will form flower buds, not necessarily for this year, but more for next year.
Right. Gather up some energy this year and make use of it next year.
And the other thing, too, is as you're looking at these trees, think about, okay, if there's a rob, if a robin tries to fly through this tree, you know, to get at the cherries or whatever, visualize it at least, that can they fly through there without hitting their wings on branches? So, again, that's an indication that if it's fairly nice and open, that the air circulation is going to be better, the sunshine is going to penetrate into the tree better, and then give better fruit color and flavor and sugar. So again, do some thinning, careful thinning. If they're old trees, haven't been pruned in 5 years, 10 years, or ever, you may not want to do all of the pruning which is needed in 1 year. Better to spread out the needed, if it's considerable pruning needed, then spread that out over 3 or 4 years. Again, so we don't stimulate too much suckering growth, and then we've got to do even more restorative pruning afterwards.
Oh.
Again, look at some of those branches. See if there's branches, you know, one branch is rubbing, crossing over and rubbing on another branch. Again, that's where you would want to remove one of those, because that rubbing is creates essentially an open wound, which can get infected with fungus and other diseases that we want to avoid.
Right. That is good stuff to think about. And it hadn't occurred to me that, like, if you kind of over-prune, or if it's been too long since you pruned, the tree's reaction to kind of over-pruning is going to be to compensate by throwing out a bunch of new suckers.
Exactly. Hmm. So there's another way to somewhat get around that. You know, this is the normal time for pruning for most fruit trees, at least. But you can also prune in the summertime. So, say, in July, when the major part of the new growth has nearly stopped, and hopefully fruit is ripening, if everything worked out well. We had good weather when the flowers were blooming and the bees were pollinating and all of that. So then in the summertime, you can do some of this pruning that you may have noticed was needed in the spring. You know, write yourself a note for mid-July or whatever. Get out there with your pruner and do some more thinning. And that is less likely to stimulate a bunch of new growth in the same year. And so then the energy of the tree is going to be stored then for the following year, hopefully for another fruit crop.
Makes sense. So that's a good justification for doing some of that mid-season pruning, even though, like you say, this right now is really the good time to be out there pruning.
Yeah. There's some things that you should not be pruning now. Rhododendrons and lilacs, for example. If you prune them now, then you're going to be pruning off flower buds. You will on the fruit trees, too. But that's okay. They got plenty. But again, so those, the timing for pruning we've talked about in the past and probably will again, is immediately after they are done flowering, and that's when they will then set their flower buds for the following year. So wait, you can prune while they're in bloom and then share the flowers with other people. It definitely matters.
Okay. That's a good tip there. We're getting a little bit of wind noise or something there on the line, but
my door, and I'm at the airport. We chat with a friend here who's coming and going back to Haines.
Okay.
So that's a good spot to quit. Just and the other thing too, though, is this is the time for fertilizing the trees, just like with the berry bushes and others, seaweed, compost, some organic fertilizer that you might punch holes into the ground, maybe 6 inches deep around the drip line of the tree, and put some fertilizer in those too, for good growth this year, and then again toward hopefully a good fruit crop more for next year, since all those flower buds which will give us fruit this year are already formed on the tree. If they got a little more nutrients, then maybe fewer of them will fall off in the summertime when they are starting to ripen and drawing a lot of nutrients.
Gotcha. Okay, and so just to reiterate, when we're fertilizing trees, the drip line is kind of out from more or less the ends of where the branches are?
Exactly, and that's where the most active root growth is. So that's where you want to put the fertilizer, not up close to the base of the tree. So, there you got big roots which don't have all the little root hairs and stuff on them. So get out around the edges, poke the holes in, and part of that is if you've got trees, say, in a lawn or something, you want to get the fertilizer down a little deeper below the... I mean, the grass roots will go down there, too, and you may see extra green spots where you hit those little holes with your crowbar or even with a bulb planter, you know, those little hand bulb planters, like that.
And so when you're punching those holes, what are you putting in those holes?
So I have various mixed fertilizers. So if you go to your local retailer, and that might include, you need kind of a balanced fertilizer. 4-4-4 is one of those that I have. Even something with a little bit more phosphorus, which will help be good for those flower buds and fruit growth. Or look on the packages that you're looking at buying and see if they're recommended for fruit trees and that sort of thing.
Gotcha. Nice.
So you're not going to use lawn fertilizer, which is high nitrogen, right around the base of your fruit tree. That will tend to stimulate more long leafy growth, not what you want usually.
Gotcha. So a nitrogen heavy fertilizer, you know, that's going to be something for leafy greens and stuff, but you're wanting something balanced because you're stimulating flowers and fruit.
Yeah. And again, compost is really good for that, and the seaweed likewise is really good for that.
Great.
So again, that's the same thing. You put a ring of that kind of around that drip line of your compost and seaweed.
Perfect. Great. Okay. Well, that is a great tip to leave us with, Ed. And thank you so much for taking the time to share your wisdom with us week by week. And we look forward to talking to you again next week. And to listeners out there, if you have a question for Ed next week, get in touch with me here at the station or call in during the show next week, and we will get that question answered for you.
And I will mention, if you're still there, Lauren.
Yeah.
That we canceled our garden conference a couple of weeks back.
Yeah.
Well, we're working on the planning for a virtual garden conference.
Ooh, nice.
Starting hopefully around April 15th, a couple nights a week, and going into early May. It will be free, and details will appear on the Southeast Alaska Master Gardeners website. There will be a registration on there where folks can sign in, and we're going to be doing this via the Zoom platform, if you're familiar with that. And folks, we've already got, I'm just recontacting our speakers and have our spaces. We'll have a schedule online so folks can be able to participate, watch, listen, and potentially even ask questions through that. So more details next week.
Cool. Wow, that's a nice adaptation, and that's going to make it accessible to folks who aren't able to travel, and that's great.
All over the world, potentially.
Wow. Oh, cool. Great. Well, look forward to hearing more about that next week then, too. And
all right.
Okay. We'll wish you a good week. Stay well out there. All right. Well, that was a great episode of In the Garden with Master Gardener Ed Byarski. Lots of good homework for us to be out there doing in the gardens, pruning especially, and starting stuff, and hardening off our starts for the greenhouse, and lots of different ways to prune, depending on what it is we're pruning, and it's great to kind of have that run through by Ed. Deeply appreciated, and great tips about fertilizing, especially our trees and everything, this week. That's your homework, everybody.